Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Why are we doing this?
For the love of the game, mate.
For the love of rugby.
On today's episode,
why are scrum halves paid less?
Should hookers go on strike?
Mike Brown's PowerPoint skills.
Should the Champions Cup semis be a neutral venue?
Coley's secret line-out codes.
And Uncle William's sailboat. Well, hello, Ben. How are you?
I'm good, Coley. You okay, mate? What's going on?
Not a great deal. You look very dressed up, Ben.
Yeah, I am a bit, actually, aren't I? Well, thanks for noticing, because I did make an effort.
Well, you're wearing a jacket.
I've actually just got a plain white t-shirt on, but I'm wearing a jacket over the top, so shows how used to you are seeing me in absolute clobber. Not as bad as Freddie Stewart, who basically dresses in the lost property bin. But yes, I have made an effort. My uncle's coming up today to see me, so he is arriving in about an hour's time, and then we are heading out for lunch. He likes to find things in life. And me being me, I totally forgot that he was coming up, and I've now booked a restaurant last minute, and it probably isn't to the standard that he would want.
Pizza Express.
I'm going to take him to ZZ's maybe and tell him and try and blag it that it's a one-off Italian and it's nothing to do with the chain, and it's a family-run business, local Italian in the area, it's a great restaurant. And try and absolutely blag it, but I'm not sure we'll go for that. So anyway, we're all right. I've sorted it. I know where we're going. We're going somewhere for lunch. It's quite nice. So
the first time I ever met your uncle on the farm, I was with Tom. Your uncle's like, "Oh, Dan, do you sail?" And I was like, "No, I don't." He's like, "Oh, because I have a sailing boat." I was like, "You can use it." I was like, "Thank you very much. I don't sail. It's fine." It was like, "Oh, Dan, do you ski?" I'm like, "No, I don't." He's like, "Oh, because I do. I have a chalet if you want to use it." I'm like, "No, it's fine. Thank you. No, it's very polite, but very kind, but I don't." There was like, do you play tennis? I'm like, no, I don't. Oh, because I have tennis you could come and use. I'm like, it's very kind, but I do you swim? I can swim, yes. Do you want to use the pool? I'm like, yes, please. That'd be brilliant. Thank you. So yes, no, I understand the finer things in life.
Well, he's making a big effort to come up and see me. But yes, I am dressed up. I'm going out for lunch with my uncle.
Speaking of the finer things in life, Ben, how is Toby?
He's good. I thought that, you know, you might want to see him. So there is the big guy.
Hello. All right, Tobes. He's very active this morning.
Yeah, he's up and about. He's had his greens and he's up and about. I'll put him down. I'll let him have a stroll around.
Does he weigh 10 kilos at the minute?
I don't know, actually. I haven't scaled him. I'll put him on the scales before the next pod and I'll let you know what his weight is. I'll give you a weight.
Can we get live on social as well? Like a UFC weigh-in.
We can track his weight, so... but yeah, he's happy. He's fine. He's now crawling underneath the desk. He'll just...
What greens do you give him?
He likes kale. He really likes kale.
Is he?
He's a big fan of kale.
He's quite a posh tortoise, then. He's kind of like a waitress tortoise. Yeah. Can't just eat like celery or anything like that.
God, no.
I only eat kale.
It's one of those where it's like, what's left in the fridge in terms of the greens that I haven't eaten, being the professional athlete I am? And kale's one of those things that every week I'll grab, being like, so good for you. I'll have some of that. Never really have it. So I'm always left with a massive bag at the end. Spinach, you like spinach?
Yeah.
And then I have some special tortoise food, which I put in. Nice. So, yeah, the big guy's happy.
Does he like water?
Yeah, he has water in his pen.
Because you get terrapins, which live in water, don't you? And then you get turtles that live in water, and you have a tortoise.
Which doesn't.
Just splashes about in water.
He does just splash about, but he's... And the dog's not bothered by him either, which I always find quite interesting. But yeah, he's fine. Yeah. Operation 120 is well underway. The big guy's in a good place at the moment.
He's going to live for like 100 years, so there's no real rush to get there, is there? He can do his bulk, you know, a nice slow and steady one.
Yeah, there's no time constraints. Like, he can take his time. He's actually, you know what's quite surprising about him? He's actually quite quick.
He's gone, has he?
No, I got him. He was underneath my feet. Right, Toby's safe.
Toby's safe. Right, shall we answer some of the listeners' questions, Ben?
Yeah, let's get into it. I'm ready for it.
All right, it's a question from Angela. How does Ben feel about scrum halves being the worst paid players in the Premiership? The Premiership salary cap has come out, it's been altered the past few years, and scrum halves are the worst paid players.
Of all the positions in the league, the scrum half is not valued.
Fly halves are the highest paid, £217,761. They've had a £7 pay increase from last year, apparently. And scrum half was lowest paid, with an average income of £121,104. Still pretty well paid for an average scrum half.
It's done on an average. So for every scrum half, you need one starting, obviously, but you also need one on the bench, which means most squads have four scrum halves. Some actually have up to five. So when you take it as an average, scrum halves actually take up quite a lot of position, like as in they take up a fair few slots in terms of the squad. So every team will be running with definitely four scrum halves, potentially five. So if it's done on the average, then that's probably why they're the lowest paid.
They basically said the average squad, senior and academy averages, has increased from 69 to 76. Change club, blah, blah. Senior salary cap, the squad, senior players, they've gone from 45 to 47. Right, so if the salary cap's at £5 million and there's 47 person per squad, all it takes, it's like they say about how the 50 cap player gets paid now £361,000 a year. But all it takes is one or two, surely 50 cap players, to be marquee players at £1 million, for instance, like a couple of the highest paid players in the league. And it just skews everything out of balance. And similar with like fly half, scrum halves, all it takes is one really high paid player. Because if you think about it, there's 40 scrum halves in the league, so if you have one really high pay one, it's going to have quite an effect on the rest of the squad. So
if you take Flyer, for example, you're going to have Andre Pollard, marquee, Finn Russell, marquee, George Ford, marquee, Owen Farrell, marquee. So like, Marcus Smith, marquee. So you've got five,
yeah,
like that I can only just think of the top, yeah, of my head there. They're all marquee, so I'm not sure how that works. And then with regards to scrum half, like I say, you're going to have like four to five scrum halves in each squad because you always need one starting, one on the bench. There's always, you need your third and fourth. So then the average of that, or they're just really bad agents at negotiating contracts. I'm not sure which what it is, Coley.
Some players in the squad are on, say, a 19-year-old. I think if you've come through your academy, like you get a £30,000 credit or something towards a salary cap. So £30,000 of your salary doesn't count against the salary cap. So basically, you get a load of like 18, 19, 20-year-olds being paid £30,000 because they then don't count on the cap. So I guess if you're four fifth choice scrum halves, a 19-year-old getting paid that, then that will obviously have a knock-on effect on the average. You know what I mean?
There actually is a fair amount of data, Coley. This is the third annual report, and it's 46 pages long.
Well, page one is the introduction. Oh, we get to page six, and it says history.
With the picture of the cup.
Yeah. Oh, we get to page eight, section three, salary cap background, and a picture of a line out.
I like page 10. Operations and management of the salary cap, and it's just a picture of the ref. Actually, they've really tried to drag out the many pages they can by just putting imagery up.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on, I've got another here. Section, page 15, section 5, total club payments, and it's just a picture of Dombrandt running out.
Alex Dombrandt running out with a fan, running out with a mascot, yeah.
Page 18, squad sizes and players used, and then it's a picture of a team in a huddle.
Yeah.
But here we are. Average senior income by position. So fly half average is £217,761. Props, Coley, £143,187.
Yeah.
Wings.
Oh, yeah. They've taken a pay cut this year.
Lox. I tell you what, Lox are sought after, aren't they?
Yeah, well, Lox, there's a finite amount of people that are 6 foot six, 6 foot five plus, and can jump in the air and run around and push. So I guess that's probably supply and demand. Second row, you can get away with, say, four in your squad, maybe five. Whereas prop, for instance, you're going to need eight minimum, four each side. So it's, yeah.
Oh, so it's actually quite detailed, Coley. As you scroll down, I know there's a lot of pages we've just absolutely mugged off, but it is quite detailed as you go down, because if we look at props, for instance, 10% of props are on 30 to 50K. So that's going to be like your development props. That's going to be like your young and upcoming props that are coming through the system.
Yeah.
Ooh, there's a 3%er. 3% of the props are on 400K plus.
That's Bristol, isn't it?
I would say that's probably Bristol when you've got Genge and Sinclair.
You kind of want to know how many props are in the Premiership. You'd probably look at, like, if there's 10 in a salary capped squad, so we're looking at 100. So across the league, three props are on 400 grand a year plus, whereas scrum half, there is nobody on over 350K a year, which is interesting.
Nothing. Nothing over 400, nothing over 350 to 400. There is 3% are on 300 to 350. There's no one in the 250 to 300 either.
Yeah.
The bulk of nines is, well, 35%, whopping 35% of 50 to 100K. But then you're looking at 16% at 200,000, 250K, 16%, and 13% at 150 to 200K.
It's quite interesting.
If you look at fullbacks, 10% of them is actually on 400K or more. 10% of fullbacks. That really surprises me.
It's a bit like Moneyball-esque, isn't it, in some regards? You have to play for, like, your fly halves and premium positions, whereas scrum half, you kind of, yes, as you say, you have a quality starter, and then after that, oh, we need bodies, need bodies, need bodies.
One thing I will say, Coley, is a huge shout out to the 39% of hookers that get paid 50 to 100K on playing the most mental position known to man, where you hit a scrum with both arms pinned behind your back. There's 39% of those lads that play the most ridiculous cannonball mental position, that is hooker. Well played to you. Fair play. You must really love it.
Oh, yeah. I'm also looking at the 8% of locks that get paid over 400 grand a year. 8%? Where the fuck are they going to be then?
Oh, Marrow's going to be one of the...
Hookers probably need to start holding out for more cash. Because I don't think they've... Maybe it's... I mean, I've played with a lot of hookers and I get a lot of them, but some of them aren't the smartest. And maybe if they work out that if they stop throwing the ball in to lineouts, then it's a very specific skill set.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So maybe they've actually got something there that if they all withheld their labour... that they'd probably get paid more because no one else really wants to do that. No one else wants to go into a scrum with their arms behind their back. The hookers need to go out and they need to meet up somewhere, have a little meeting, drink some cider or whatever they want to drink, and then all discuss, like, guys, let's hold out for pre-season next year, like an NFL-style holdout, and then let's just demand more money. Because I tell you what, lads, no one else wants to do this job.
Maybe, like, they agree on one round of the Premiership where they all stand on the line to throw in, and they just stand there, no one throws, and gives away free kicks all game long, but it happens across the board, and it's like a collective buy-in, because if 39% of them are paid 50 to 100K to throw in, maul, tackle, modern-day hooker has to play like a back row as well, carry, jackal, clean, hit a scrum, like you say, arms pinned behind his back, scrum collapses, it goes straight into his face. Like, fuck that. Like, no chance.
The average hooker is getting paid £1,000 a year more than a winger. He might not even see the fucking ball in the game, the winger. The hooker is, like, axing everything, scrummaging, throwing it in. He's constantly involved. He has to run around. He gets panned if he's not running around. He's like, you've got to be a set-piece player. You've got to actually run around the field. You can't just be one or the other. You have to be active, involve everything. And then you're getting paid £1,000 more a year than a winger who may or may not do anything.
My God, the hook, like, we will represent the hookers. I feel like they need some representation because they have got it all wrong, mate. I'm going to have to chat to a few lads tomorrow about this. This is madness.
Yeah.
Wingers, half the year, mate, don't do anything apart from chase the ball because the weather's so shit. So you're just paying for an athlete on the wing to chase the ball and maybe slap it back.
Yeah, the clubs are definitely playing on hookers there because hookers are like, they're one of a kind. I don't know how they've pulled it off, but somehow the wool's been pulled over the hookers' eyes and the hookers are getting stuffed there.
Yeah, totally. Wingers I kind of get because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
Like, wingers is like a market where, like, you can find wingers easily. And if you want to, you can go abroad and find wingers. So, like, there's just so many. Like, New Zealand's like a conveyor belt. You obviously got the South Sea Islanders that also produce wingers after wingers, loads of English wingers as well. Like, so wingers a position where I think, you know, the market's probably is saturated, but hookers, Jesus Christ, someone needs to grab the ball by the horns there, mate, and sort that out.
The fact they get the average is under 29, but is that if you take out, say, the top 10 earning props, does that then put the prop average down to where, say, the hookers are? You know what I mean? Because you might have,
yeah,
if you've got 10 players earning, well, three players earning over 400 grand a year, that's 1.2 million quid. That's 10% of what the props in the whole cross-hole league get paid. So we should definitely get someone that actually knows what they're talking about to discuss this stuff.
We should do that. And we will also answer more of your questions, because we've only actually answered one so far, after the ad breaks.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Here at Mindset Win, we want to give you the tools to become better at what you do.
Taking inspiration and wisdom from our guests, we will hear stories, strategies, tips, and tricks.
Told by leading names in sport and beyond.
Who know what it takes to get to the very top.
There will be two episodes each week, packed with amazing stories and practical takeaways for us all to follow.
Search for Mindset Win on YouTube and on your favorite podcast app.
Mad Saxon on Instagram. If they can stay fit, I think Underhill, Curry and Earl could become the best back row England have ever had. What do you think? I think, Coley, they ain't winning a line out.
That was my initial thought. I thought there's not a lot of height there. But there's a lot of sort of 5 foot seven to 6 foot. However, I think they would be a very phenomenal back row to have to play against, in regards to they can all belt here, they can get over a ball, they can carry. You got the ability to play in wide space tight. You are lacking probably a width player, maybe, and also that height in the line out, like, say, a Courtney Laws or someone like that, who is a, in today's day and age, we say you need probably three line out jumpers. Unfortunately, between those three, while they all can jump out of line out, you wouldn't be wanting to rely upon them for defensively. And also, one of them would have to go in like a 5-man defensive line out, and the opposition would go, oh, we'll just throw it on you. In fact, we won't even jump. We'll just take it above your head.
That's what I was going to say, is we don't even have to go up.
Yeah. I'll just do this. And they'll be like, nyeh, 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 trying to get it. And they're just like, yeah, thanks, mate.
I would say, to be fair, I would say is you could pick that back row, but it'd have to be certain games. Like, you couldn't pick that against certain teams, you know, in terms of line-out stuff. And if you've listened to the Courtney Rules episode we had, you know, he talks about, obviously, the back row's job in terms of line-outs and all that. And if you only have two jumping locks, he literally says it's impossible to then win a line-out or compete and do that. So it's a great back row, I think, on a warm day against a team, let's say like a Fiji or something like that, that doesn't necessarily put a huge amount of emphasis on their line out. So you could probably get away with it. But if you played against, let's say, South Africa or New Zealand or Ireland or even France, you know, you're probably not going to get away with it, because they'll dismantle your line out and equally win it where they like on their line out.
Okay, question from Trish. When is George Ford coming on? The show has been going for 3 months now.
Well, Trish, it has been going for 3 months, or a little bit over. But George Ford is coming on. He is. And strap yourselves in, because it will be a great insight. It'll be a fantastic episode. And he is coming on, and we are looking forward to catching up with him, aren't we? And having him on.
We are. It might even be more than one episode, Ben, because I think he's been so, you know, for the past 30 years of his life, he's just, there's a lot in George Ford, I think, that he wants to come out, and he's might potentially have a safe space to do it now.
We'll get the wealth of George's knowledge, experience and everything, and he doesn't do many things, let's say like media stuff, does he? So, but he'll definitely do it, and he is going to do it. So he will be fantastic. So Trish, you can look forward to that coming out very, very soon. We have a question from Andy.
Mike Brown has to give a presentation on the values of the game after he swore at match officials. How do we think that's going to go, Ben?
I think he'll do a really good job.
He's actually Brownie, like, he's quite a highly educated bloke, and he's got his degrees, and I think with his degrees had to like present things and stuff, so I think he'll actually be quite smooth when it comes to the presentation. I mean, he'd be fuming that he has to do it, but I think he'll actually be good.
I mean, yeah, he'll huff and puff about doing it, but he'll actually do a great presentation, I'm sure. Like you say, Coley, like he's pretty glued up on all those bits, so he will do it, but equally he'll still feel a sense of injustice, because that's how Brownie kind of feels most of the time.
So basically Mike got two yellow cards in a recent game against Bristol. I think he was walking off the field and the fourth official overheard him huffing and puffing and muttering about something or other, and the fourth official interpreted that as he was being abusive towards match officials, I believe. However, having been in the sauna recently with Mike Brown, he denies this and claims he was just upset at himself and it's been interpreted wrong.
Well, do you know what? I've got quite a funny story about it. Can you remember, we played Bristol. We played Bristol, and it was the Steve Borthwick, Pat Lamb sideline of "Don't lie to me, Pat." And it was quite a big moment, you know, like people enjoyed seeing that, you know, the two head coaches, DORs, and the passions on the sideline. And Leicester, we were pushing for a 5-meter scrum and trying to win the game at the death, and we don't. And Ian Tempest, the referee, gives a penalty to Bristol, and they clear the lines and the game's over. And my brother says to Ian, watch it back. And he interpreted it as, if match officials or whoever lifts up the audios, he interpreted it as, watch your back, as if my brother's going to be waiting for him in the car park. You know, like that, you know, that sketch of Jose Mourinho when he's in the car park in his Real Madrid kit waiting for the referee. Like he's going to be saying, so he said, watch it back, as in watch the scrum back because it's the wrong call. And it was interpreted as watch your back. Like he's going to fit him in the car park.
Just when he's out shopping on a Saturday morning with his family. Your brother's driven away from Norfolk to somewhere to like, yeah, I've got him now. Get him.
There's tempo. Cool. Chase him. Absolute genius. But he ended up having to do not a presentation, but he had to do some sort of course or referee's course. And he had to then go referee a junior game, which he did. He went and refereed a junior game. And that was part of the disciplinary, even though it was a total misinterpretation of what was said. I think it was one of those things where he said, no, I said, watch it back. And they're like, oh, no, you said, watch your back. No, I didn't. I said, watch it back. And it was like, but they'd already like...
decided what he'd said and...
Decided. So it was like one of those things. Is like, right, well, we're going to save face and you can referee a kids game. There we are. Give back to community. So he did it anyway. But it was quite amusing.
Yeah, it's only in rugby where we get like the... I can't work out if it's good or bad. But like, yeah, you get punished. It's like you're going to have to give a referee game rugby, or you have to give a presentation to people about the values of the game. And it's kind of good in some regards, but it's kind of like a bit of a tick, like the whole tackle school thing where it's like, oh, you've taken someone's head off. But if you do a few sessions of you tackling a bag at the floor, you can get off for a week. Even if it's not a tackle that's been done, you might have cleared someone out wrong. I remember the couple of times people have been cleared out, but you go to tackle school and you get a week off your ban.
No, exactly. So, so Brownie will have to do that. And like you say, there is bits now around. Because ultimately, as a player, you don't want to miss any games. And you get banned and stuff. And I think what they're trying to do is create things around it where you can shave off a week, basically.
I wonder if they'll have to do like videos or just like it would be just a PowerPoint. Or they just be, just watch my career highlight package, lads. Here you go. Or just the images are just of him playing rugby. You know, it's like that salary cap report we've just read where it's like loads of different images. His will just be him. Here's a good value of the game. Here's me running out for England.
It's like we've all been there, Coley, where someone's done a presentation to us and all the presentation is just about them and how good they were.
Brownie be like, oh, there's one time. Here's an example of fair play. In my 60th game for England versus Wales, I helped this guy off the floor. Just like that. Just make it all about him. Yeah. Yeah, I was actually running out for my 300th game at Quinn's and I waved at the crowd. That's a good good example of fair play. Good values of the game, that.
Here's me cutting the ribbon to open the Mike Brown bar. at Quinn's. So, you know, there's a goodwill. There's a goodwill I did. Who knows? I don't know what his strat is. We should find out. We should get him on.
It should be recorded and shared with the... Because obviously the RFU have to know it's going to happen, so it's going to be recorded. So somehow we have to get hold of this recording. And I think for the wider rugby public need to understand the values of the game, because I think the values are slipping, and I think this presentation could make a massive difference in the world of rugby. So it needs to be made public.
It does. Everyone needs to see it. Right, we've got a question from Chris, a Gloucester fan. Gloss have been rubbish for a lot of the season. Would you swap your season for ours? Well, I suppose, like, in terms of league stuff, yes, they've been inconsistent, but they're now in a European Cup final, and they won, obviously, the Prem Cup as well.
It all depends on how highly you value the Premiership Cup and also the non-Champions Cup, European Cup, whatever that one's called. See, that's how highly I value it. I don't even know what it's called. The Challenge Cup in Europe. If you value those two things highly and you go European silverware, brilliant, we'll take that chance. And you go Premiership Shield, that's silverware as well, that's brilliant. Then would I swap eighth for ninth? Would I swap eighth in the Premiership, a current ranking, for ninth? And ninth, you get a chance of Europe and you've won a trophy? Then yeah, probably I would. However, do I suppose that if you win, do you get into the Champions Cup next year?
I believe so.
So maybe you take that risk. But then our season hasn't been the best. Would I swap it for Gloucester's? No, probably not, to be honest.
No, I agree with you.
Question from Tom. Do you think the Champions Cup semi-final should be held at neutral venues?
I don't think anyone would be against that. It's sort of, where do you take it and where do you go? You know, because if it's, you need the fans to travel, it needs to be easy to get to. It needs to be a venue which is probably going to be chosen in a year in advance, but it needs to be able to, because you don't know who's going to get there. You want the teams to travel. You want the fans to come there. But it kind of would make sense to have it at one venue over a weekend and have almost like a festival of rugby. But maybe do you put the Challenge Cup games there as well? I don't know. But you could probably do a Friday, Saturday and a Sunday. You know, do you put two games on the Saturday?
I think from a rugby perspective, I think it could be really brilliant, because I say you get four sets of fans, maybe some neutrals as well, who just bought tickets on the off chance. Yes, as meeting in one city for the weekend, rugby fans, you know, when they all get together, can have a great time. And I think from that perspective, it'd be brilliant. I think from a rugby perspective as well, in terms of, say, growing the game and stuff, if you had it in like Portugal, I think Lisbon's one of the places you could be. It's fairly accessible, it's hotels and stuff, so it'd be good. The only question is, you want to do it, you'd have to reorganise the season, so the semi-finals aren't the week after the quarterfinals or 2 weeks after. You want to have enough time for fans to be able to go, right, I can get there, I can have a weekend off, I can do it, rather than the hodgepodge of Europe where it's like, yeah, here you go, here's a week to organise your flights and everything to the semi-final. And it's like, that's cool, but no one's going to turn up and the attendance isn't going to be two sellouts, where it is obviously is in Dublin as a sellout, Toulouse as a sellout, because the fan bases are there. So yeah, it needs to be, they need to have a good think, make it accessible, when it can actually, fans can get there, and if there's enough, you know, time in between quarters and semi, there's a couple of weeks this time around, so it probably would work. But obviously we've talked about South African fans and stuff travelling in and out, so, and to say, it kind of works as well in some regards if you've got big fan bases like Toulouse, Leinster, English teams. But if you got two, say, South African teams in the semi-finals, I don't know how many fans would travel from South Africa to Portugal to watch a game between two teams.
Yeah, it's a nice idea. If they can make it work, it'll be great. But there's a little bit of thought to be had, isn't there? The agreement is, if any South African team makes a semi-final, they have to come to Europe. They can't have any semi-finals in South Africa. That's already an agreement.
Yeah, I think that's fine. It's just a question of whether, but you get two South African teams, say, playing in a semi against each other or across the board, are they going to bring several thousand fans? Like, I know the Irish would travel brilliantly. A lot of, you know, Leicester fans would go across, but is there going to be enough fans there to sell out a 30, 40, 50,000 capacity stadium? Or are you just going to have an empty stadium full of, say, corporate types, and it's not going to be the atmosphere you actually really, that kind of game you could get at Croke Park, or you saw at the weekend, or in Toulouse, where you got fan bases that are going mental and loving it and actually adding to the occasion rather than just being a bit stale.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that.
Question from Nick. How do you think Jacques Nienaber has changed Leinster? I don't think he's made massive changes. I'd say they're maybe a bit more solid, I would say, defensively. I know they sort of brought in a rush defence, but I think they don't seem to press as hard or rush off the line as hard as they were early in the season, when literally they were jamming in and making massive hits. They've seemed to have calmed that down a bit, but at the same time, they do use it in spurts. So I think they're probably a bit more possibly pragmatic inside their own half and defensively a bit more aggressive, but I don't think they've obviously got something that works really well. So I don't, you know, they haven't changed it that much.
No, I agree with that. But they also, I'd say, yeah, they're not as aggressive off the line as they were, but they're still pretty aggressive, selective at times. But they certainly come. I'd say the breakdown, I see a lot of emphasis. I mean, Irish teams have always been traditionally very good at the breakdown, and they compete and they're difficult and they make it a mess. But I've definitely seen some aspects this year of Leinster where they seem more, even more competitive at the breakdown, especially defensively, like trying to slow you down, like blasting through the ruck. What that is like when you make the tackle, instead of jackling, you don't go for the ball, but you just simply try and push the other player off it. And if you get momentum, then someone else joins it, and all of a sudden it becomes a mess. It's a big part of the game, actually, which is changing quite a bit. I think you've probably made them a little bit. You can see they're a little bit more defensive in terms of their mindset. But I think that's only natural. If your head guy is a defence coach by trade, you're probably going to be a little bit more that way. Whilst not losing, certainly in the opposition half, is the ability to strike quick, which they do. We've got a question from Tom, actually, and this is a good one for you, Coley. At a line-out, sometimes a prop will tell the hooker the move in a quiet voice. Are they still using the code word for the call, or do they just say front because nobody's able to hear anything?
No, we do still use the code, partly because as a prop, I only really need to know half the line-out codes, the ones that involve me. I need to know the lifts that I'm involved in, but if it's going to the back, I don't need to know that call. But I need to repeat the call because the hooker needs to know it, because he needs to know every single line-out. So it's just easy for us to repeat the entire thing, then it's out of our hands. My favourite time was when we had a period at Leicester where... What I enjoy is Tulio Montoya's like, he's Argentinian Spanish speaker. We had Facundo Higuita, who was a Spanish speaker. Our line-out caller was English. And what I enjoyed was when it would go through three different sets of languages sometimes to get to the hooker. Especially when the prop taking the call is not his first language and you see him processing the call and you're like, oh, fuck, we're going to lose this line-out. Literally just walk into the line. He's running to the hooker and the hooker's like, yep. And there's no, like, you know what I mean? There's no nuance to it. It's like, that's the call. It's like, is it the call? It's like, yep. I don't think that call exists, mate. Yep. Right. Thanks. So, it can fuck up sometimes.
You know you're deny, and then reaccuse?
Yeah.
If you're the messenger telling to the hooker, and the line-out caller's told you the call, but you then tell the hooker a completely different call.
Yeah.
And it's on you, do you go, no. No, Chez, that was you, mate.
What did you say, Chez? No, I said that exactly. That's what I said. Bloke's not very good English, mate. See what's Argentinian calls in his head. I said that as well. Just lie. There was a period this year when I think we all came back from the World Cup and we were translating this year's calls into last year's calls to make sure that people knew what we were doing. Because I think Chez, I got yellow carded in one of the games. So the non-caller was calling. And then we had to bring a back row into the line out. And it's just like, right, the call is this, which last year was this. And everyone would just do last year's call. It was like, oh my God, this is so complicated and all over the shop. But it worked out because actually won the line out and scored off it. So
talking of line outs, a question from Lee. And this guy was a very good line out caller. Question from Lee is, did you always think Jeff Parling would be a top international coach?
Oh, good question, Lee. I'm going to say... No. You know, I hate it when people go, yeah, I always knew he was going to be a great coach. It's like, you're just lying, like you didn't. So no, I didn't always know he was going to be a great coach. However, Jeff was one of those players that his body was terrible, put it that way. But he had to learn. I don't think he was very genetically gifted in regards to what he had. Also, he was tall, but he had to sort of really... he struggled to put on weight, I think, you know. He had to eat loads, he had to train really hard to keep weight on and mass on. But he's one of those blokes that loved the game so much that he learnt the technicalities, the nuances, the ins and outs, everything. And his line-out calling was... It wasn't just like... Because it wasn't like he was 6'8" and massively springy, so he could just go, throw it to me every time. He had to learn the intricacies of where to throw the ball, how to manipulate defenders, how to get... opposition players looking at the wrong way to throw the ball in. So he's one of those players, and similar with stuff around the field, he was such high effort, high work rate, but he had to learn how to sort of run lines and learn how to tackle. Not learn how to tackle, does that sound bad, but everything he did to such a... he committed to it full on that he became technically brilliant because he just learned. He pushed himself so hard in that regard because I think he knew he couldn't compete genetically. And I think because of that, you get those kind of guys that learn the game so well that they end up being great coaches because they have such a knowledge and a detail that no one else does. And that's how they've got to the top. It's not because they're just freaking everyone else. It's because they've learned the game and the ins and outs of it. And that's what they pass on. And that's what they can coach. And the traits that they see when they played, they can add to his lineup calling now, or the lineup system he runs, and what they attack and what they do and how they set it up. So if you were to ask me 15 years ago, 10 years ago, when we played with Jeff, you know, like, oh, which players in this room do you think would make a good coach? You would definitely point out Jeff and go, Jeff, because he knows rugby, he knows nuances of the stuff, and he loves it. So you'd say that. But did I know he would go on to become an international coach and he's going to coach Australia against the Lions? No, I didn't, because I'm not that arrogant to claim that I could.
But you're right. There is people that go, oh, yeah, you was always destined to be a great coach. You can't tell. I mean, the only people that I can think of at the top of my head that you go, like, he is going to be a great coach, if they decide to be, is Owen Farrell and George Ford. Because, again, they've got such a wealth of knowledge. They see the game. They spend countless time, like, video. Like, they speak in meetings. They present. They know all the ins and outs of like, what a team needs to perform and all that. That, you know, they're the only two guys I can think of at the top of my head. You go, like, you could actually say, if they decided to do it, they would be very good at it. But like you say, it's very hard to predict many other people. Like, how do you know? You just don't know. But
with those two, it's not exactly the biggest...
surprise.
Both sons of coaches, of international level coaches, growing up in the game, and that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like, most people would probably, you know what I mean, be able to predict that. But I agree, don't take anything away from them. But like, for someone to go, oh yeah, no, I think he's going to be like a left field choice, just pulls him out the back. Yeah, he's going to be a good coach. Like, you can't ever say that as a player. But anyway, I digress.
Excellent, Coley. Right, a few things to finish off. Special mention and good luck to everyone playing in the Papa John's Community Cup Finals this weekend at Twickenham. Coley, anything else to mention, mate?
Yes, actually, Ben, there is a fantastic challenge happening this weekend. A group of guys, former players, are running from Gloucester. I think they set off tomorrow on Friday to arrive at Northampton on Saturday. I think they're running, it's basically three marathons back to back, which is going to be 78.6 miles, and those three marathons they're basically running for three different charities, which is My Name's Doddy Foundation, the Fortitude, which is curing colon cancer, which is Tom Smith, his former Lions prop, his charity, and for Ed, obviously, for Ed Slater. So those guys are wish them the best of the luck. We'll try and put the link, if listeners want to donate to that, because it's three fantastic causes. We'll put the link in the show description. The guys were leaving from King's Home Stadium in Gloucester mid-morning on Friday, so tomorrow morning, and they'll be running non-stop through various villages and towns until they reach Franklin's Gardens in time for kickoff, when Northampton obviously play Gloucester on Saturday the 11th. So they're running 78.6 miles and save three fantastic charities.
Absolutely, Coley. Fantastic. Three fantastic charities for wonderful causes. If you want to donate and, of course, get involved, then do so. And if you see him on the way to any of those fixtures, give them a toot. So well done to them. Any other news is happy birthday, Coley.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Any cake? Anything? What are you doing for your birthday? Crazy golf?
No, I'll be on a bus up to Sale. Not even a party bus, a player's bus. So I would say it's going to be a crazy birthday, but I don't think it will. I'll probably wake up staring at a hooker's ass because I normally room with them. That sounds, you know, I can make that sound a lot juicier than it is, but how'd you spend your 37th birthday, Dan? Well, I woke up in the morning staring at a hairy hooker's ass.
Really?
Yeah, no, it was a teammate.
Well, I tell you what, you got some reading to do, mate, with the salary cap thing, so you enjoy that. I'm about to go out for lunch with my uncle, so I'll ask him for what his opinion of a fine bottle of red wine is, and maybe I'll purchase one for you, depending on what the price bracket is, because there is a limit with you. And I'll also ask him if his boat's free, so you can maybe go for sailing, mate. Maybe he'll, you know, you can have a party boat.
Oh, thank you. For the love of rugby.
If you want to drop us a line, get involved with our socials.
Just search for @loveofrugby. And if you've listened to all our episodes and need another podcast, go and find Joe Marler's Things People Do. For the Love of Rugby is ad-free on Amazon Music. If you listen on Apple, you can get it ad-free for £1 a week.
See you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.